This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A graduate of the University of Cincinnati and local fashion entrepreneur landed a spot on the new season of Project Runway. It premieres Thursday night on Bravo. We talk with her coming up. But first, does that pile of rubbish in your garage spark joy? The growing popularity of new Netflix star Marie Kondo and her decluttering ways have created a consciousness of what we really need in our lives. So what's your story? Too much stuff in the office, time to get rid of some things, but don't know where to start? Some local experts are here to talk about it. Joining Cincinnati Edition today are Clinical Director of Outpatient Services and Staff Psychologist at the Lindner Center of Hope and Associate Professor at the University of Cincinnati's Department of Psychology, Dr. Charles Brady. Welcome, Charles.
Good morning, Marco. Thanks for having me.
And Minimalism and Simplicity Coach, Rose Lounsbury. Welcome, Rose.
Hi, Michael. Thanks to be here.
Absolutely. If you want to join the conversation, or if you've got some questions about the clutter in your life, or if you just want to call and ask for a friend, it's 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some in the show. So the phrase spark joy is now part of the American lexicon, thanks to the popularity of that series Tidying Up. Its host, Marie Kondo, has inspired many people to clean up their homes, their offices, and their lives. So before we dive into the processes of that, I want to know more about what each of you knows about the impact that clutter can have in our lives. So Rose, you're a minimalism and simplicity coach.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, basically, it means that I help people simplify and declutter their lives. So I know in my own life, personally, I have triplets. When they were 2 years old, I felt a lot of anxiety in my home because I was working full time. I would come home. I have these three toddlers. There's stuff everywhere. And the level of stress that I felt in my home was pretty immense. And so when I started decluttering and letting go of that, I felt just a sense of freedom and relief. And so when I work with clients and when I work with my students, I see that in them as well. So when we let go of the things that are kind of weighing on us, there's this great freedom that results as an effect of that process.
So when somebody calls you or meets with you to talk about their issues with clutter or too many things in the house or office, what does that meeting look like exactly?
So a lot of times we will meet in their home if they're in the Dayton area. So I operate out of the Dayton area. So we might go to their home and take a tour, talk about the different spaces that are bothering them. If there's a particular space that they really want to work on, we will dig in and we will actually go through a process where we declutter that entire space. We minimize the excess. We simplify it. We put in systems so that they can move forward the way that they want to. If they don't live near me in Dayton, we do the same thing, but we do it virtually through Zoom on the computer. So I do the same thing where I help them decide what stays, what goes, create a vision for their space so that they can have that same sense of freedom and peace in the space that they want.
And so how do you train to become an expert in this? Having three kids all at once is probably a certain qualification, but how do you get this credibility for people to rely on you for this information?
Well, I think coming from my own personal experience is the biggest thing that I can offer as credibility, because I know what it's like to live in a home where you feel like the environment is chaotic. You feel like all you're doing is constantly picking up. You're constantly reorganizing and reorganizing. And I know from what I learned in my own life how to do this. And then I've read books. I've written my own book. I've done a TED Talk. And I've worked with hundreds of people helping them do this. And so what's interesting is I see patterns in everyone's home, and people think it's just them. So for example, everyone has a box of mystery cords in their closet or their basement. They don't know what devices those cords go to, but everyone feels like they can't let go of them. Or they say, well, I have to ask my spouse before I can let go of these. So there are certain patterns and things that I find that we all have, things that, you know, connect all of us, right? We all have the junk drawer with things that we don't know what to do with.
We're talking clutter today on Cincinnati Edition. If you want to join us, it's 513-419-7100. Charles, you're in psychology and you specialize in obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD. So I imagine that condition plays a role in people being unwilling to part with things.
Yeah, it can play a role. Actually, when you look at clutter when it gets to its extreme, and there's actually a diagnosis of hoarding disorder, which resembles OCD, but is actually a separate disorder.
And we'll explain those to us. What would just give us a brief elevator pitch on OCD and hoarding disorder.
Sure. OCD in general is when thoughts come into a person's mind that create a lot of distress, and that person naturally doesn't like to feel distress or pain, and so they learn to do something to try to get rid of them. So the most classic is a person may have a fear of germs. They feel that they touch something that's germy, all of a sudden the alarm goes off in their mind, and they feel that they have to wash their hands. And it's the washing of the hands that temporarily brings down the distress. But over time, they have to wash their hands more and more to get that same feeling. Now, that's your classic presentation with OCD. Hoarding has a little bit of that flavor to it in the sense of what Rose was talking about, that fear that people have of parting with something. It has a similarity that when they start to think about, oh, what if I get rid of this and I regret it? What if I would need that later? What if someone else could use that? So they end up struggling with letting go of things. There are other facets of hoarding that may be beyond the scope, but that's where the similarity is. And I think one of the keys is that when a person realizes that, what they're afraid of really is their own fear, their own shame.
Yeah, so there's actual brain activity that's associated with these things. So I found this study out of Yale University concluded that there is actual pain involved for many people in letting go of things. I'll describe this study very briefly. Researchers at Yale Med School, they asked hoarders and non-hoarders to come in and sort through things like junk mail and old newspapers. And some of these items belonged to the researchers. Some of the items belonged to the participants in the study. And so the participants had to decide what to keep. And the researchers tracked the brain activity as they dealt with this decision. And hoarders showed – so they had hoarders and non-hoarders. And so the hoarders showed increased activity in the parts of the brain that let doctors know these people were struggling with this decision to toss their own junk. So that's consistent with your studies.
Yeah, and I think that's a misconception that people have a sense of folks who might have clutter in their house or people who may even have a hoarding disorder that they're often branded as lazy or – that they just don't work hard enough. But what they really don't understand is that they're facing a different experience than the person who doesn't have that feeling. It's a actual pain. That's no better description of it.
Although I actually think even people without that experience that to maybe a lesser degree. Mm-hmm. I know when I have worked with clients and we've sat down and we've gotten out all their papers and we're going to deal with it, we're going to go through it. More than once I've had people say, I feel ill. I feel nauseous. And I know for my own self, when I went through some of the things in my home that were difficult to deal with, so, you know, I didn't have a problem with things in the bathroom or my clothing, but when I dealt with some pictures or memorabilia and I threw some of them away, I can only describe it as I felt like I was jumping off a cliff. It was this feeling in the pit of your stomach that you can't actually believe you're going to throw this away. And it's just a thing. It's just paper. But I often say that when you're dealing with your stuff, it's not like you're just dealing with the physical object. You're dealing with your feelings about that stuff. And that's why it's difficult, I think, for anyone, not just people mm-hmm. who are struggling with a more severe end of the spectrum.
So a lot of people are talking about this situation because of this show, Tidying Up. It's got a lot of people asking whether their collection of things sparks joy. Rose, are you noticing an impact on people because of this show, an impact on your business?
Well, I definitely have had more interest in my business since the show came out. People come up to me and say, oh, you need your own Netflix show. So Netflix, if you're listening, I'm here. I'm ready. But yes, I think that what's interesting about it is that everybody has stuff. We all have stuff. And a lot of us feel like we have too much stuff. So a show like this is applicable to almost everyone because everyone has things in their attic or their basement or their closet that they know they probably don't need, but they also don't really know how to part with it. We see the stuff and we think, oh, I don't need that. And then we just close the door because we don't really know how to begin with letting go. So I think Marie Kondo's show has been helpful. And, you know, she presents that question, you know, does it spark joy? Yes or no? So there's a way to jump into it, to actually letting go. I have methods that I use with my clients to help them jump in and start letting go. So I think that's what the show does, is it brings to mind something we all struggle with, but actually gives you a solution or a way to begin tackling it.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's go to the phones. We have Brenda on the line. What's your question or comment, Brenda?
Yes, I have a lot of family members and friends who are artists, both amateur and professional, And so our house is full of beautiful things that friends and family have created. And I don't have room for all of it. A lot of things that need to be framed that haven't been framed. I feel overwhelmed with this, and yet there's a true sense of guilt in wanting to maybe reduce some of these things. Any thoughts on how to, you know, they all spark joy in that sense because they were made by people who are important. Any strategies for how I might deal with that?
Great question, Brenda. We'll hang up and let the experts weigh in.
Well, Brenda, I'm interested. You said they all spark joy, but you also said that you feel overwhelmed. And I would think those are not the same feeling. Am I right?
I let her go. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I usually hang up on
them. Okay, I didn't know that. Well, Brenda, I'll let you answer that wherever you are. But I often find that what you're experiencing is something that a lot of people experience. We've been given gifts of things that we find beautiful or they were given by someone that we love. But if you're not enjoying them, then that gift is not really probably sparking joy in your life. A picture, the intent for a picture is to be displayed. There's really no other purpose for a picture than to look at it. And if you have so many things that you're unable to look at them all and enjoy them all, then the proper thing to do to honor that picture or that painting is to give it to someone who can display it so that it can be enjoyed. And however that would look to you would be a solution for you. You know, you could donate it to a school. You could find a charity that's looking for artwork for their walls. There are lots of ways to let go of it. But I think what it kind of comes down to is you're feeling overwhelmed because you're not honoring what this item is meant to do. This item is meant to bring joy through display. And if that's not what's happening, then find a way so that that item can do what it is supposed to do.
And Charles, how does sentimentality play in the psychology of this?
It can play in pretty strongly. I mean, in a situation like this, there's a decision that has to be made. And so many times we look at decisions as right versus wrong. But really, in a situation like this, we have what we call competing virtues. It's kind of right versus another right. And those are usually the toughest decisions to make. It feels right to honor the gifts, but it also feels right. I want my space back. I want to be able to have this room serve the purpose that I envisioned and dreamed of when I bought this house or this apartment. And so you don't have one right and one wrong. It's that tension that fuels that anxiety. And I think where people go back and forth in their struggles is trying to come to terms with that. And that can be very important. And as Rose said, it's a wonderful suggestion to say, hey, can I find another way to let these objects be honored so that I can have that space the way that I envision it, the way that brings me joy, the way that, you know, fills the dream that I have for myself while at the same time doing justice to the creation.
We got an email from Brenda. It included a quote from Wendell Berry, the author. It says, quote, "Don't own so much clutter that you will be relieved to see your house catch fire." More on how to break up the clutter in your life coming up. Cincinnati Edition continues after this short break. This is 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We all want to live a full life, but can life be too full of junk? Where to begin on decluttering your life? We continue now with Clinical Director of Outpatient Services and Staff Psychologist at the Lindner Center of Hope and Associate Professor at the University of Cincinnati's Department of Psychology, Dr. Charles Brady, and Minimalism and Simplicity Coach, Rose Lounsbury. Join us in this conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We will look for your comments or your tweets. We'll go back to the phones first. We have Amy on the line. Amy, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, hi. My mother was the saver of all family photo albums as older members of the family died. And this occurred all through my childhood. Well, I have them now. I don't have kids. I don't want them. I've reached out to the family members
who have children who may want to pass them on, and nobody responded. And so I think as I was on hold, I'm kind of wondering if I could have some third-party permission to just dump them all. And I'm talking like 5 to 6 large of photo albums that date back to post-Civil War. And I, they're cool, but there's duplicates, there's scrapbooks, there's ephemera, old-fashioned cards. And I'm just really not interested in taking them from place to place anymore. And they really do sit in bins in my basement.
Great question, Amy. We'll hang up and let the experts answer. I got to say, that question gives me anxiety because, gosh, this is so much family history and such. But what should she do?
Well, one thing that I always tell my clients is that you are the keeper of your own memories. We are all the keepers of our memories. Thus, that means that none of us are obligated to keep the memories of people that have come before us, and we're not obligated to keep the memories for people who may come after us. So if you have inherited things from people who came before you, they've given you their memories. If those memories don't matter to you, you are not obligated to keep them. You are the keeper of your memories. Likewise, because I see this go the opposite way, I see people hanging on to things for their kids. And I say, well, if that thing matters to you, keep it for you. Don't keep it because it may matter to your kids. Your kids are the keepers of their own memories. So that's where I would start with that. And if hopefully that gives you permission to realize that if these things don't bring joy to your life, if they don't matter to you, let them go and keep your own memories that matter to you. Because honestly, memorabilia should make you feel joyful. You should look through it and love it. And if it doesn't feel that way, then these memories are not that important to you.
Charles, is there a way for people to project their own sentimentality onto somebody else and to create a sense of guilt in somebody who wouldn't naturally be prone to that?
I think that happens all the time. I mean, particularly when we're not the one who's having to carry the burden. I mean, so many times I think of what our listener just shared was, I think of the story of someone says, here, have this backpack. It has 50 pounds in it. Please carry it around with you the rest of your life for me.
That's a very good point. We have Emily on the line. Hey, Emily, thanks for listening. What's your question or comment?
Hi. So I found Marie Kondo's show when I was actually moving into my own apartment, and it helped me a lot. But when you all were talking about the ill feeling you had, I really related to that. But I realized that I just had to do it in small doses over time to help ease it. And I don't think I really had a question. I just had a comment about that.
Great comment. And I think that kind of goes exactly with what you're saying. Didn't give her feelings of joy, so she parted with it.
Right. And I think it's okay for it to take a while. When I went through my house and I did this myself, it took about 8 months. So I think that as you learn to live with less stuff, you learn that you can live with even less. It's sort of a process, like a slow sloughing off of layers.
Awesome. We've got Marilyn on the line. Hey, Marilyn, what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, hi, Rose. This is your friend in Indiana.
Hi, Marilyn.
And I just wanted to ask the question, I have friends who have a very cluttered existence, and they complain about it. They complain about anxiety. And I know how much better, as I work through going with your book Less, has helped me. But, they don't even realize that the clutter is associated with that anxiety, I think. And so how do you say it nicely or try to put them on that path when they're not seem to be getting my hints?
Great question, Marilyn. We'll hang up and let Rose answer.
Well, I think when you're trying to get other people to realize that they are struggling, that's going to be a hard call, right? I think just like I'm sure Dr. Brady knows, people, when they want help, they will seek out the help. I do think a lot of times people don't realize how much anxiety the clutter causes them until it's gone, right? You may not realize if you're carrying around that 50-pound backpack, you may not realize how heavy that backpack was until you take it off. So I think the best thing that you could do, Marilyn, is you be the example, right, that you hope your friends see and pick up on. I don't think it works to try to convince other people that they should let go of their things. I once had a client hire me to help her father without telling her father, and that did not go well because she thought her father should let go of his things. He did not want to let go of his things, and I learned a very good lesson that day that we can only take care of our own things.
Right, and this goes beyond just cluttering, too. I mean, you think of how long we've known that getting adequate sleep and eating in a healthy way is better for us. It helps us manage our emotions better, gives us more energy, but yet still so hard humanly to do it. I think with cluttering, one of the things come down to people get overwhelmed and they put a pressure on themselves that it has to be done overnight. I like what Rose pointed out, that saying, no, this is not an overnight process. And we caution families who think, well, can we just bring in the truck this weekend and just get everything out of the house? And our answer is that you can do that, but you're really not helping the person learn anything. And if you go in that direction, chances are, come back and visit us 6 months later, the clutter has regrown itself because you've never really helped the person get down to the issues that have helped generate that clutter. You haven't helped them face that anxiety of what it's like to go through that uncomfortable, ill-type feeling and realize, yeah, that wasn't comfortable, but it was okay, and I feel better afterwards.
Mary Jane emailed to suggest that some historical society might want those old photos or memorabilia. We got a comment from Sam. He says he's used Rose in the past, and when you have to deal with a medical diagnosis, decluttering can be essential. This is comment. And Tom says he started buying accessories for items he hasn't used in 30 years and wants to know what's up with that.
He's buying accessories for items he hasn't used. I'm guessing the accessories are from 30 years ago.
Gosh, I don't know.
So, yeah, Tom, I mean, I kind of have this this rule that if it's not useful or beautiful to me, I'm going to let it go. So this is sounding like not useful if it's been 30 years. And I can't imagine these accessories are beautiful, but I don't know what they look like. But if it's not useful or beautiful, Tom, I would get those out stat.
Yeah, you probably don't need a charger for your flip phone anymore at this
point. I don't think so, no.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have April on the line. Hey, April.
Hi.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was just wondering if there was any type of basis on collecting as a hereditary thing or if it's more of like a learned habit.
Good question, April. We'll hang up and let them answer. Either of you know the answer to that?
Well, you use the term collecting, and I want to make a distinction here because collecting does not mean clutter. It does not mean hoarding. When we talk about collecting, collecting is usually done in a very organized fashion. People are going out searching for the exact items they want. They tend to organize them very well and have a place. Collecting in and of itself does not necessarily bring about stress. Many collectors will tell you that is what brings them joy. It's much different than cluttering. Where you might see the genetic link is that sense of that urgency of saying, oh, here's something that looks so good. I need it right now. And what ends up happening is the person doesn't play the tape forward and saying, okay, well, what would the downsides of this be to the last email? You know, ooh, this accessory looks very attractive to get right now, but are there any downsides if I bring this into my home? So many times if we take that extra step to play the tape forward, we can start to answer our own questions on whether or not this is really an object that is going to be valuable to us or bring us joy.
Stephanie emailed, and this is probably something that you've dealt with before, Rose. She wants to know how to get her daughter to stop hoarding and to declutter, but she wants to be able to do it without hurting her feelings. So how do you go about approaching somebody else when it's not your problem, it's someone else's?
A lot of this would depend on the age of the daughter. So I'm going to assume this is a child living in the home with the mother. I generally say if this person is living with you, you cannot start this journey by trying to get the other person to change. So I would recommend that you be the change you wish to see in your house. So look at yourself first. What does your bedroom look like? What does your amount of clothing look like? What does your kitchen look like? And if you are setting a model of living simply, living minimally, then you can invite your daughter to help you, right? Invite her, hey, could you help me go through the pantry? Could you help me do this? And once you've invited her, then you could approach her and say, hey, would you like me to help you do this? It's a question, right? So she's allowed to say yes or no. And if she says no, okay. But maybe a month later, you can ask again. But you cannot nag or force people into compliance when it comes to these things, because what that will do, and I'm sure Dr. Brady, you probably know, is it will cause them to cling on more tightly to their things.
We got another emailer from Lucinda, or she called rather, and says that you can give some of these items to churches or artists or charities. That's a point I wanted to raise. Is there any relief to people who are dealing with hoarding when they know that it's not necessarily going to the dump, but rather to possibly another use for someone.
I find that it's much easier for folks to let go of something if they think that it has the opportunity to bring joy, to bring something positive into someone else's life. That makes that decision of my personal loss being quieted down by that sense